We are reading 1 Samuel chapter 21, verses 1 to 15. It's page 244 in the church Bible thing. Let's hear the word of God. Then David came to Nob, to Ahimelech the priest, and Ahimelech came to meet David trembling and said to him, "Why are you alone and no one with you?" And David said to Ahimelech the priest, "The king has charged me with the matter and said to me, 'Let no one know anything of the matter about which I send you and with which I have charged you. I have made an appointment with the young men for such and such a place. Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread or whatever is here.'" And the priest answered David, "I have no common bread on hand, but there is holy bread, if the young men have kept themselves from women." And David answered the priest, "Truly women have been kept from us as always when I go on an expedition. The vessels of the young men are holy even when it is an ordinary journey. How much more today will their vessels be holy?" So the priest gave him the holy bread, for there was no bread there but the bread of the presence, which is removed from before the Lord, to be replaced by hot bread on the day it was taken away. Now a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord. His name was Doeg the Edomite, the chief of Saul's herdsmen. Then David said to Ahimelech, "Then have you not here a spear or a sword at hand? For I have brought neither my sword nor my weapon with me, because the king's business required haste." And the priest said, "The sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom you struck down in the valley of Elah, behold, it is here, wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you will take that, take it, for there is none but that here." And David said, "There is none like that. Give it to me." And David rose and fled that day from Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath. And the servants of Achish said to him, "Is this not David, the king of the land? Did they not sing to one another of him in the dances? Saul has struck down his thousands and David his 10,000s. And David took these words to heart and was much afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. So he changed his behavior before them and pretended to be insane in their hands and made marks on the doors of the gate and let his spittle run down his beard. Then Achish said to his servants, "Behold, you see the man is mad. Why then have you brought him to me? Do I lack madmen that you have brought this fellow up to behave as a madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house?" Thus ends the reading of God's word.
David is on the run from King Saul. It has been clear that Saul is out to get him, and now everybody knows it. Jonathan is convinced of it, his good friend Jonathan, and everybody knows that Saul is not inclined to put up with David, and has death threats against him. So David begins his life as a fugitive. And he will be on this fugitive path for some time. There is some speculation that David, there's some question as to exactly how many years David, between the time David was anointed king to the time he actually becomes king in the early part of 2 Samuel. But if you recall, David's a young boy when Samuel first anoints him to be the king. And then it says later on in 2 Samuel, after he becomes king, that David is 30 years old finally when he eventually becomes king. And if you count the years, if David's 15 years old when he's first anointed as king, and he's 30 years old when he finally gets to be recognized by king, by the people, that's 15 years of David on the run. 15 years of transition. 15 years of not knowing when this is going to end, he kind of knows what's going to happen because God says you're going to be king, but when and how's it going to unfold and what's going to happen? Is he even going to make it that long? And so this is David on the run. Now, I have this theory that everybody in their lives at some point is in an experience, and I like to call it the wilderness experience. Because the wilderness experience is that transitional time between, you know, where you were and where you're going, but you're not quite there yet. You know, you're either in between jobs or you're You graduated from school and you don't know what your career path is going to be, or you're about to have children and you just got married and you're about to have children, and I don't know. There's these transitional periods that go from where major things are going to change in your life. And if you look at a lot of the people in the Bible, they had these what I would call wilderness experiences, where they were in periods of transition where it was sort of hard to know. It was a time of uncertainty and great questioning in their lives, maybe in some respect. Abraham is called to leave his home, and God promises to give him a land that he's going to inherit, but he doesn't inherit it right away, and it's a long journey from Ur to where he's going to go. And so Abraham experiences a sort of a wilderness experience. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in particular is very pronounced in the wilderness experience. Remember, Jacob leaves his family because his brother wants to kill him, and he goes and lives with Laban for a number of years. He's sort of out in no man's land. He's in the wilderness. And finally, after that experience, he returns home. But it's a period of transition. Jesus had a wilderness experience 40 days before he began his ministry. 40 days he fasted and prayed, and he was in the wilderness being prepared for the ministry that God had him. The Apostle Paul had a wilderness experience. He's converted on the road to Damascus, but soon after his conversion, he spends a number of years in Arabia. And you read this in Galatians chapter 1, you say, well, what's he doing in Arabia? Well, we don't know, but it was a transitional period of his life where he's moving from being a person who is antagonistic towards Christ to being the primary missionary of the gospel, and yet there's this period in between where he's in this wilderness experience. David is in the wilderness experience. He's been anointed king, but he's not quite king yet, and Saul's still the king, and Saul wants to kill them, and until Saul's gone, David doesn't get to be king, and so David is just sort of wandering around trying to escape. Now, the wilderness experience is actually very helpful and beneficial. I read one commentary, well, it wasn't a commentary, it was just an article. I read one article this week that said that this wilderness experience for David was necessary to see if David was worthy to be the next king of Israel. And I don't think it was anything about David being proved to be worthy to be the next king of Israel. I think it was God preparing David to be the next king of Israel. I think the wilderness experience was key and crucial to David's life and to the development of his character and of his faith, if he's going to be the kind of king that God wanted him to be. Because it was in the wilderness that David learns some pretty important lessons about who God is and about how God's at work in the world and about what God will do for him. And it's those things that I want to concentrate on this morning. What did David learn from his wilderness experience? And I'm going to have four things, and here they are. Here's the first thing that David learned, and he learns it. We're going to look at chapters 21 and chapter 22, but this is from chapter 21. He learns that God will sustain him with his presence, that God will sustain him with his presence. Now in chapter 21, David flees to Nob, which is where the priests are, and he runs into Ahimelech, who is the chief priest. And Ahimelech immediately notices that something is wrong in verse 1, because Ahimelech, he meets David trembling, and he says to him, why are you alone? Why is no one with you? And Ahimelech knows that there's something up between Saul and between David, and so Ahimelech's a little bit concerned when he sees David with no great contingent. And David lies. There's no other way to say it. David flat out lies to Ahimelech about why he's there and what he's doing. Ahimelech says, what are you doing here? And David says, well, I'm on a secret mission from the king, and I had to leave in haste, and I didn't even have time to get some food, so I need some food. Do you have any food that you can give me? And Ahimelech says, well, the only food I have, I don't have any regular bread. The only food I have here is the bread that has been in the presence of the Lord. Now, you learn in the Old Testament that there was a system by the Old Testament priest whereby every week they baked 12 loaves of bread, and on the Sabbath day they placed this bread in the presence of the Lord in the tabernacle and in one of the holy places inside the tabernacle. And they would leave it there for 7 days, and then after the seventh day they would remove it and replace it with fresh bread. And it was very clear from the Old Testament that only the priests were allowed to eat that bread because it had been sanctified. It was holy bread. It was bread that had been in the presence of God, and so only the holy priest could eat the bread. And Ahimelech says, well, this is the only bread I have. I don't have any regular bread to give you, but you know what? If you're on a holy mission from God, if the men have kept themselves from their wives, which what they were supposed to do when they were going to battle, and if they're holy and everything's okay, then you know it's time for me to remove the bread anyway. I can just give you some of these loaves. And so that's what he does. He just gives them bread from holy bread that comes from the presence of the Lord. And then David says, oh yeah, I forgot too. I need a sword. Do you have any weapons? And David's having a hard, at least if it was me, David would be having a hard time selling this story to me. I'm not beginning to believe it. You left on a secret mission without a sword and without food, and I don't know, something's not adding up here. But Ahimelech says, well, the only sword I have is the sword that came from Goliath. When you slew Goliath, it's sitting here in the back. That's the only one, but you can have it if you want it. And David says, great, that's a great sword. I'll take that one. Now there's some sacramental, I think, significance to what goes on here when David goes to the priests and he gets this bread and he gets the sword of Goliath. Think about this. The bread that David receives was bread that was in the presence of a holy God. And David is going to take this bread and he's going to carry it with him. And he's going to be reminded as he eats it that God sustains his people. That God feeds his people. And he feeds them not only with bread, but he feeds them with his very presence in their lives. When you and I participate in the Lord's Supper, which we do once a month here, and we take bread and we chew it and we eat it and we swallow it, the bread is more than just bread. The bread is symbolically represents the body of Christ. And when we take that bread and we eat it, we are sort of saying God's presence is not just something that is out there somewhere, but the presence of Christ is in me. Christ is with me. Christ is within me. Now, I'm not talking transubstantiation or any of that sort of fancy stuff, but I'm saying symbolically what is represented when we partake of the Lord's Supper is Christ's presence within us. And in many respects, David is sacramentally, symbolically going to be reminded of that as he eats this bread and as he begins this journey as a fugitive. He's going to be reminded that God will give him what he needs, that God will sustain him with his presence. And whenever he picks up that sword that, remember, he used to cut off Goliath's head. Remember, David killed Goliath without a sword. Where's the sword come from? The sword came from, after David killed Goliath, David took Goliath's sword and kills Goliath. David's going to remember that battle every day he raises that sword and begins to fight. He's going to remember the day that God gave him a great victory over the Goliath, that God gave a great victory to Israel. And sacramentally and symbolically, David is going to be reminded every time he lifts that sword that God's power is with him. See, those are the things we need when we're in the wilderness. We need to be reminded of the fact that God's power is with us and that God's presence is with us no matter where we go. Because the wilderness can be a little bit lonely. You're in transition. Not everybody is with you on the wilderness experience. You oftentimes feel as if you're alone. And David's going to be reminded that God will sustain him with his presence and with his power. That's the first thing he learns when he goes and meets Ahimelech. Here's the second thing he learns. The second thing he learns is that God will rescue him from mistakes, from his enemies, and from his fears. That God will rescue him. That's the shortened version of it. In verse 10, after David leaves Nob, the priest, David rose and fled that day from Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath. Now, does anybody remember who also was from Gath? Well, it happens to be Goliath. The Philistine was from Gath. Gath is one of those five major Philistine cities, and it was Goliath's hometown. And remember, not a whole lot of time has passed, maybe a couple of years, but maybe not that much, but not a whole lot of time has passed between the time Goliath has been slain and And a great victory was accomplished in the Philistines and between this time now. So here's David taking the sword of Goliath to Goliath's hometown. Now, I don't know, but does that seem like a good idea to you? I mean, if you're a fugitive and you need to escape somewhere from your enemy Saul, are you going to go to your other enemy, Goliath's hometown? You think there are going to be people there that sort of remember the little battle that you did? You think there are going to be people there that are going to recognize that sword that you're carrying around? You think maybe that's not the best of ideas? The Bible really doesn't say whether this is a good idea or a bad idea, but it's just sort of telling the story. But I get the sense that this is one of those inexperience, where inexperience comes into play. You know, David hasn't been a fugitive very much yet. He's just getting into this fugitive thing, so he doesn't quite know how to live on the run and to avoid danger. And so here he is going into a dangerous situation, carrying the sword of Goliath, the man whom he slayed. And eventually it does prove to be dangerous because the people recognize him. They recognize the song, the man for whom Israel sang the song, Saul has slain his thousands, David has slain his 10,000s. And they said, wait a minute, isn't this the guy they're singing that song about? And at just about that time, David begins to realize that he's in trouble and that he's probably made a bad move coming to Gath. And in verse 12, David takes these words to heart and was much afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. Now David's in trouble because he's there, and Achish knows that he's there, and he knows he's a fugitive, and now they know that he's a war hero, and David doesn't know what's going to happen. So David becomes a little bit concerned. And as a result, he comes up with a plan to act insane, and if he acts insane, Achish will leave him alone, and he does, and the plan works, and David is able to escape Gath with his life and with any people that are with him. Now, what does David learn here? David learns that it is dangerous to be on the run, that following God doesn't guarantee that there will not be dangers. David learns that it is easy to make foolish mistakes. There are many enemies, and there's many things to be afraid of. But God delivers him from the problems and from the fears. And as a result, he writes Psalm 34. If you look at Psalm 34 and you look at the introductory verse, it says this. This is a psalm of David when he changed his behavior before Abimelech so that he drove him out and he went away. And this is some of the lines from Psalm 34. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul makes its boast in the Lord. Let the humble hear and be glad. Oh, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord, and he answered me, and he delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to him are radiant, and their voices and their faces shall never be ashamed. This poor man cried out to the Lord, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. O taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. O fear the Lord, you his saints, for those who fear him have no lack. The young lions suffer want and hunger, but those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. Now, where does David learn that those who seek the Lord lack no good thing? Where does he learn that when he cries out to the Lord will save him from his troubles? Where does he learn that when he's afraid, he simply is to cry out to God and God will rescue him? He learns it from this wilderness experience when he made probably a poor move and hung out at Gath a little bit too long. God is teaching him that he is a God who will rescue him from mistakes, from his enemies, and from his fears. Do you need a God who will rescue you from your mistakes, from your enemies, and from your fears? You ever made any mistakes? You ever walking down the road of life and you turned left and you should have turned right? I've made lots of mistakes. And if it were not for the grace of God, if it were not for the power of God, if it were not for the love of God, my life would be a disaster. And so would yours. Because we need a God who is willing and able to rescue us from our problems and our fears and our anxieties. And this is what David is learning, and he's learning it in a difficult, dangerous situation in the wilderness. Here's the third thing that David learns. The third thing that David learns is that God will direct him through his word. By the time we get to chapter 22, David leaves Gath, and he departs there in verse 1 from in chapter 22, and he escapes to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down to him. And everyone who was in distress and everyone who was in debt and everyone who was bitter in soul gathered to him, and he became commander over them. And there were with him about 400 men. He goes to a cave somewhere, probably not in Judah. And he goes to this cave and he finds safety and he finds refuge. And people who also need to know God's safety and refuge begin to flock to him. Predominantly his parents and his family, because obviously their lives now are at risk. And so they go to him. And then in verse 3, David goes and sends his parents to Moab. It says, David went from there to Mizpah of Moab. And he said to the king of Moab, "Please let my father and my mother stay with you till I know what God will do for me." And he left them with the king of Moab, and they stayed with him all the time that David was in the stronghold. So David's staying in the cave, and he sends his parents to Moab. Now, do you remember what the significance of Moab is? Do you remember where David's great-grandmother, Ruth, was from? She was from the land of Moab. Now, how did David get to have a great-grandmother by the name of Ruth, who was a Moabitess? David got this, this person was in his family because a woman by Naomi left the land of Judah and entered into a wilderness experience in the land of Moab. Remember, her family left, her husband left because there was a